and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everything in between. This is another episode of the Ryan Show FM, and this might be the first time you ever heard this show, so let me introduce myself. This is Ryan Vernell, and I host this radio program to bring you the best parts of the great American culture. This show has changed over the years. It essentially went from a shock jock comedy show of sorts, which I hosted with some of the Hamptons derelicts around me, out of Yamaku, the sushi spot, which is opening very soon. Finally, for the first time in many years, that's out in the Hamptons, Bridgehampton Main Street. And it eventually transformed. It's been a show of transformation, evolving alongside of my life. I partnered up with the rapper Mr. Cheeks and my best friend and one of the cats I grew up with, Hamptons Dave, the socialite of New York City. We syndicated a show nationwide, this very same show you're listening to now. And my friends are with me when they can be. And what do? I try to focus on the greatest parts of what I see around me. So if I meet somebody cool in real life, I might just bring them on the show. If I hear some music that I really dig, I might just play it on the show. So if you want to get involved, reach out to me. I'm an easy guy to get in contact with. Email me at ryan@theryanshow.net. As for this episode of the show, we brought some great characters in. Historian Joseph Hill is going to talk a little bit about World War I. I know a lot of people that have listened to the show anticipated the rest of our conversation, which we had to abruptly cut off due to our 2-hour presentation coming to an end. And even tonight, we've got just too much for 2 hours. So you should go to our podcast, theryanshow.net. The website has everything on there, and it's linked to more than just 2 hours of radio. Most people might be tuning in on the radio, so go check out our website so you can hear the whole shebang. Also tonight, Franco Vandurka is joining me. We are covering the MLB 2024 season and picking predictions on who's going to win the awards and who's going to win the whole thing. So I'm very excited about that. And I'm going from a very unbiased perspective. I'm finally going to a therapist. I'm going to tell Franco about this. It's not the same type of therapist that most people go to. It's really just my friend, Dr. Natanya Wachtel, who you hear. I'm helping her with her show. And I'm kind of just letting her into the labyrinth that is my life. And the dastardly mind that is mine. And it all kind of starts with sports. So I've been kind of realizing that my bias towards the Yankees and the emotional control that the Clippers, the Giants, and the Yankees have over me is sickening. It's deafening, blinding, and it must go. And it starts tonight with these predictions. There's no bias involved. So finally, listeners of this show can finally hear me not being biased. And also tonight, Lady Bree is going to be playing some of her new music, so we're going to be repping Lady Bree with a new song, Rep. Lady Bree joins me on Fox Sports Radio. We talk WNBA. And we have a feature story tonight. My pal Trey Lover, I used to host events for him over the years, but his love and fashion company is really taking off, and now he's teamed up with Pfizer. Don't judge him, all right? Pfizer's not literally killing people. They might be having a little bit of, blood money, if you will, but at least they're taking it and putting it into the right hands, and that's us. These are friends, Trey Lover and Love and Fashion. So big shouts to Love and Fashion. Big shouts to Pfizer for making all of that possible in his evolution, because he's helping people with sickle cell. Love and Fashion might be a fashion brand and an event brand, but it's really all to help people that have suffered illnesses. Every event that this guy threw was attached to a charity. That's what caught my attention. And now he's fully focused on sickle cell and teaming up with multiple sickle cell organizations to help make this possible, to bring awareness to such horrible disease. So we're going to get into it. There's a lot of stuff going on here on the program tonight, and I want to thank you for joining me. And without further ado, meet us on our YouTube page at The Ryan Show FM so you can see what you're listening to. Let's get a crack-a-lacking, DJ Honky Wonky. It's time to begin.
Me to paradise.
And we are back. This is the Ryan Show FM, and we're just going to get started the right way with some great music. And my girl, Lady Bree, is here to introduce her song to us. We're only picking the finest of music here on this program, and this is what we call rap. I need to know the inspiration behind this song, Lady Bree.
Basically, it's one of those songs that make you understand or help you tell people what it is you're doing, anything that you're doing for, right? Whether it's you getting up and going to work, whether it's you getting dressed and getting ready for a March Madness game, whether it's you getting up and, you know, trying to do some yoga. What are you doing it for? Are you doing it for, you know, your town? Are you doing it for your family? Are you doing it for yourself? What do you rep? Where do you rep? And, you know, how does that impact you? And what motivation does that give you? And what motivation are you hoping to give others?
I love it. It's so important what you represent because it empowers you. And you want to make sure that you represent the right things. Mm-hmm. And that includes Lady Bree. Lady Bree is just eating these days. And Lady Bree, I also want to thank you for the help over at What's Going On, helping push off that sports journalism career.
Absolutely.
Man, and you really are just great. What a gem. I got to give a shout out to my guy, Mike Loco, for setting me up with you. I mean, yo, you're just so great. I thought when I was introduced to you, I was like, okay, we've got a rapper here, heard the music. I was like, okay, wow, she can actually rap. And then I got to meet you and realize that you're just a guru of basketball, just a well of knowledge. And just, look, you're repping things the right way. You're repping Appreciate good it. Energy, girl. And I did.
And that's all about good energy. And I want to shout out to WGO, What's Going On, for giving me that springboard into that space of, you know, sports broadcasting, sports journalism, because I love sports. I've always talked about sports, never really thought about getting into it for real. So thank you guys for really giving me that space and that opportunity. You know, got to always shout out to people that give you, you know, your shot.
Yo, well, I mean, you're nice with it. And it's honestly just good to have you as part of it, because we need somebody that knows what they're talking about. And right. WNBA is on the rise.
It is. It's a golden era right now. Golden age. You know, everybody's seeing what's going on with the college women's game. And, you know, right now, college women's basketball is probably one of the biggest sports or one of the most popular sports that people are talking about right now. You hear people like Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and everybody else talking about how they know more women's college basketball players and then we're excited for that tournament than what's going on in the men's. And I think that has more to do with the dynamic of, you know, how quickly men go into the league. But, you know, I'm really happy to see women's basketball and women's sports in general start to kind of come into its own.
Yeah. And be taken more seriously, and it's watchable, and it's good basketball.
Yeah.
I was talking smack earlier on WGO just to be an idiot, and Fuego Base came in and was just talking. He prefers to watch the women's college basketball tournament over the men's college basketball tournament.
And the reason why a lot of people feel that way, both men and women, is because, and pros will say this, women's basketball, because we're not always as athletic as men, we don't have the luxury of being able to just, you kind of jump over people and not stick to fundamentals. Like in order for a team to be really, really good, if you look at South Carolina, they do a lot of fundamental things right. Like if you want to understand basketball, and if you have a child and you want them to understand and learn what it is to play real basketball at a high level and without all the flashy stuff, you can add the flashy stuff later. But the core fundamentals are executed at an extremely high level in the women's game right now.
They are. And, you know, we talk about the evolution in NBA basketball. A lot of people say that there's no more defense. Everybody's just shooting from so far away that the game's almost devolved in certain ways, that it's not as fun to watch. How would you describe the evolution of women's basketball? Could the same thing be said about that?
I think right now, I don't think that the elements of the men's game that is entered into the women's game is taking away from it. It's making it more entertaining. Let's be very, very clear about that. Seeing Caitlin Clark shoot from 40 plus feet is going to be entertaining because we're not seeing people with a 48 inch vert get up and get down and dunk on people. So it's like, we're looking at different things. We're expecting different things. You know, I do see what people are saying in terms of the men's game, you know, devolving a bit in terms of, you know, the defense not being there and things like that. But people are going to watch sports for entertainment. Like, let's be very, very clear. Sports is on TV for entertainment. The people who watch the game and understand it and analyze it and watch it for educational purposes, we're looking at two completely different things. So, you know, watching it from that perspective, I love seeing Caitlin shoot the three from crazy long. I love seeing women being able to get that far out and make things exciting. But I'm also just very, very happy that the sport as a concept and as a brand for women has stayed true to what it's always been and what's always been about: team ball and getting the ball in the hoop and keeping the other team from putting the ball in the hoop.
Do you think that someone like Caitlin Clark, is her game going to translate to WNBA?
I think it will. I think it's going to take time to adjust. Let's be very clear. I think the reality of the situation is that I can't say that players who do really, really well in high school and college don't do well in the WNBA. We've seen it happen in the NBA with LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and, you know, names like that that just come in and just know what it is to be a successful pro player. I think the challenge that may catch up with Caitlin is that she's never not been the one, right? She's never not been someone that necessarily is being paid attention to. I'm not saying that she won't be paid attention to. Of course, she's Caitlin Clark, but the game is faster. Yeah. Like, we're looking at cream of the crop. Like, they're much bigger. They're getting paid money. These are their jobs. It's not just a scholarship. These are women and, you know, non-binary people and otherwise that are actively doing this to make sure that they keep a job. Like, there's not that many teams in the WNBA, and we're looking to expand, but people are looking to do this for a living. So, you know, she's going to have to understand what that intensity looks like and understand what it means to be a pro and not necessarily have people praising her all the time. I'm not saying people do that now, but it's a different level. Coaches are not going to care what you did in Iowa, what records you broke. It's going to be about, can we win games? Can you help me as a coach keep my job? So, you know, it's business at this point.
Yeah, we'd like to see her put up that many points against some of the ladies out there right now.
Listen, it's nuts to me because chances are she's going to go number one and she's going to go to Indiana Fever. And Indiana Fever the Liberty open up against Indiana Fever. So it's going to be very, very interesting if I get to see that. Her and Aaliyah Boston should be a really great duo. But we got Stewie and Bree and John Quo. So, hey, let's see what happens.
Very exciting. And Lady Bree, I know you're very, very busy. I'd like to keep you around longer, especially because, you know, you brought up non-binary in the WNBA.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's going to be interesting to see, because as WNBA gets bigger, it's going to push things into the forefront. A lot
For
of
sure.
social changes and For things sure. like that. It's going to become more normalized.
For sure.
I mean,
For sure.
what do you see the future of gender equality looking like in that sense, if that is even gender? I'm such an ignorant pig with it, Lady Bree.
Let's talk about gender expansiveness, right?
Yeah.
In the space of recognizing that, you know, the WNBA in itself is kind of gender, quote unquote, limiting specific, but let's be very, very clear. Like, not everyone who has a woman's anatomy identifies as being a woman. So they might identify as being other than. So they, them in that space. So understanding what it is like to navigate that and respect that in a space where, you know, everybody is literally just trying to do what they love and be successful at something that they've been playing on playing their entire lives, you know, allows us to just make us realize that there are probably more people around us that feel this way and that, you know, we should just understand how to, like, let them be who they are. It's, you
Donald
know, it's,
Trump. Donald Trump made a despicable joke about LeBron James becoming a woman and joining the WNBA. Do you ever see a future where great men's basketball players, even if it's a legitimate transition, even if they really do feel like they're a woman, like say one of the great star college men's hoops players comes out as a woman, joins the WNBA, do you think that that is fair for him to do or her to do at that point? Or is that where we look at some of the rules there?
I think it's about the evolution of where society is and where the game is. I think understanding people's transition, people's journeys, you have to find a space to recognize that that can happen. And what does that look like in terms of being fair and understanding that? But what does that also look like in terms of wanting to make sure that, you know, there's no discrimination and there's no harm being done to that person entering that space? So I haven't really given that much thought, but, you know, who knows?
It's a real possibility. It's a real possibility. And it's, you know, not a conversation for right now, but when you see how far women's rights have come, you see both sides to it. I always try to see both sides of it. At the same time, if somebody really feels like they are something, who's to tell them that they're not?
Right.
And if that's the shift in gender rights, then who's to say otherwise? So I guess we shall see what happens. But Lady Bree, we are going to be bumping rep right here tonight on national radio. And I want to thank you so much.
Love it, stream it. There we go.
If you love it, stream it. Go follow Lady Bree everywhere at Lady Bree on Instagram and all platforms. And there's a show really quickly that we'd like you to go to on April 2nd, where Lady Bree is going to be performing at the Javits Center.
It's a free show, NFT NYC week. If you know, you know. If you don't, let me let you know that if you love art, you love digital art, if you're interested in crypto and not in the insane crypto bro scammy thing, no, real true understanding of how cryptocurrency is allowing artists to make money off of their art without any middlemen in the picture. Like, it's the future, you know, whether it's digital art, whether it's music, whether it's video, like it's coming. We need it. We need a space and we need a way to be able to take control of our creativity and monetizing it.
It is the future. And it's good to have your Lady Bree, one of the ladies that can kick ass on the guys. And I'm sure you could destroy all my friends' basketball. I always found that, you know, we talk about guys or transgenders joining WNBA. My favorite, I don't know if you can remember, because you might be too young for this reference, but Bad News Bears. The girl in Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
I used to have the biggest crush on her. She'd come out there and destroy everybody.
Yeah.
Good times.
I mean, hey, I'll tell you one thing. It's something about being an underdog. It's something about coming in, you know, and people not giving you your credit. You kind of end up in a very, very good position. That's what we see in the March Madness. You know, somebody has a lower seed. People count them out. Next thing you know, you're getting beat by 20 by a team you weren't even paying attention to. So, you got to give people, you know, respect in all aspects of what it is that they do, because they work hard just like you do every day.
That's right. Look out for that Cinderella story, everybody. Nobody go anywhere. This is the Ryan Show. And follow Lady Bree. And we are doing this rap.
Yeah. Back in my pulley. I'm back in my bag. Me talking, I know that they mad. I don't know why they try to do it like this, when they can just barely go do it like that. I'm wasting my breath when I spit it's a feed. If you don't talk nice, you ain't speaking to me. I meant what I said and I said what I mean. Could be on my rust, but I came with the team. You don't want smoke.
You don't want smoke.
Huh. Now you don't want problems. This Houston, I'm harder. Can stay on the bench. You know I'm a starter. Perpetually starving. Cause once I go get it, I gotta go harder. I do it for honor. I do it for telling the story of pride. But this ain't a story. Now this is ambition. Yeah, this is the glory. Yeah, this is the pain. Yeah, this for the days when the world would ignore me. This is the reason it didn't absorb me. This for them times when the shorties would bore me. This for them nights when I couldn't sleep and kept moving. I felt like a zombie moving slow. Watch your mouth, watch your tone. Who you checking?
Who you checking?
Footprints all on these.
I've been steppin'.
They be hating on the low,
I don't respect it.
Cause even when I'm not at home, you know I'm reppin'.
You know I what?
Watch your mouth, watch your tone, who you checkin'?
Who you checkin'?
Footprints all on these, I've been steppin'.
Step.
They be hating on the low, I don't respect it. And even when I'm not at home, you know I'm reppin', no I rep. Everyone sweated, they want it. I know they don't know what it come with. They probably don't know what it take. I take it in stride, they run it in place. I'm never gonna fold this a waste. I take what I'm dealt and make it an ace. Born for this. Check the stats, man, it's all legit. Put in work, never call it in. Till I hit my jersey like an ornament. The one they call when it's crunch time. Never played the back, just the front line. The pressure ain't for the faint of heart. I ain't tripping, no, cause it pump mine. Check the bloodline. Watch your mouth, watch your tone. Who you checking? Footprints all on these. I've been stepping. They be hating on the low,
I don't respect it.
Cause even when I'm not at home, you know I'm repping.
You know
watch your mouth, watch your tone, who you checking?
Checkin'?
Footprints all on these. I've been stepping. They be hating on the low,
I don't respect it.
And even when I'm not at home, you know I'm repping. No, I rep. She gon' do rap, 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 rap. What he gon' do rap, 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 rap. What we gon' do?
And we have returned. Like we said earlier, this episode of The Ryan Show FM is brought to you by These Sales Ain't Loyal, the event that is going down this Saturday night in New York City. And I'll be there late night in attendance, hanging out to bring awareness to a horrible illness, sickle cell. And if you've listened to this program and you've come to our parties over the years, you may have run into my pal, Trey Lover, who is the CEO and creator and founder of Love and Fashion, one of the great sponsors of the show and a pal of mine over the years. We've worked together closely. And on the show, Trey, it's evolved over the years, but we try to bring on the best damn Americans that we can, guys that are trying to contribute to making this country better. And you are doing exactly that. You've partnered up with some really big brands to do so, including Pfizer, which we're going to get into later. Shouts to Pfizer. There's a lot of misconceptions about Pfizer out there. But just to see the evolution of your brand amidst the circumstances of what you're fighting, having actually, you've been fighting sickle cell your whole life. And I found out today that you have quite the amazing come up story. I didn't know any of your background. I just knew that you built this company, Love and Fashion, and it's grown over the years and you're throwing all these big events. But I just wanted to come on and kind of highlight your story. This year, we're kind of bringing on some of the people that have been working behind the scenes to help make this country greater, like I said, and I feel like you're one of them, Trey. So first off, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Oh, man, listen, thank you for one for introduction and just make it sound so wonderful. And I appreciate you for your kind of words. I'm doing fantastic. You know, I feel any day that I'm alive and I'm here, I can talk, think, live and enjoy my life is a blessed day above ground. So I thank you, God, I'm here today.
And one of the first things that comes to mind when I talk to you is just grateful. You're just such a grateful dude. So happy to be here. And I didn't realize why. Now it makes a lot more sense because of the origin story behind you. Every hero's got that ill origin story, and yours is no different. Having to fight literally from rock bottom to get where you are right now. So, I mean, why don't we take it back? What was your childhood like?
My child is a West Indian upbringing. I'm Guyanese. So it's a lot of discipline, a lot of can't do this, certain kind of things. We were grew up in church as a Seventh-day Adventist, and we were just pushed to do good in school and to just try to accomplish something in life.
And you were in New York City from the beginning?
No, I actually came to America at the age of six.
I grew up in the
Bronx. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, first generation American, what were your thoughts when you first came to America? What did you think you were in for? Do you remember being six and coming here?
What were my first thoughts? I remember it being cold. We didn't know what winter was and we didn't have winter clothes and we were wearing shorts and it was outside with snow. And we had to end up getting friends to take us out around and get us winter clothes. That's the first experience I have of America is just being cold.
What were your expectations of what America was going to be like?
I mean, at that age, there was no expectations. I was in a different land. I was 6 years old and everything went from being around people that were honestly happier and just nature and life to now being in this concrete jungle of a place and just hustle and bustle 24/7 and just school. It's a whole different environment.
I've heard some wild stories of how people got into this country. Stories from people that got here at 6 years old, albeit many were from Mexico and they had to like hop the fence, if you will, cross the border. What was the process like getting in here? Was that an experience in itself?
For me, like I said again, that for me wasn't that much. It's just my parents had to just do their paperwork. We came here legally and we came here. My mother came here to just get a better education and just to better employment, more opportunities.
Wow. Okay. So, Guyanese, come to America, you're a New Yorker now, and let's just like get into your first moments where you realized that you were going to be doing business, being a businessman, right? Like being an entrepreneur, it's a struggle, man. And it's a struggle that most people don't want to sign up for. When were your like first origin days? When did you start becoming an entrepreneur, I should say?
I would say that kind of hit me around 2011. There was a young lady who contacted me and she heard about me just doing events from some of my previous clients working at Club Scream and just being a promoter of different events and whatnot. And she asked me to manage her and I decided to do it. And at that time, I realized, hey, I'm about to start being a business owner. And I started thinking about if I can go back in high school, my teachers were left because now everything I hated in high school was everything I'm doing in life. Now I'm a business owner and I'm always having to do something with calculations and something, which is math. I'm always studying history. How can I learn from my present to make it better? And those are things I hated in school. So it hit me like things are just different now. And I realized I can do more than what I ever thought I could do before.
So when you got into your entrepreneurial journey, that was after you had rebounded from some of the dark depths that you had hit after high school that we had talked about a little bit before the show.
Yeah.
Where would you say that your life kind of like took a turn after high school that put you in a bad spot? What was it that led to the bad position that you were in and how low did it go?
Well, that started in 2005. And honestly, it was just, I'm gonna be very honest. It was due to my West Indian upbringing and my American, I guess, narrative and the way I did things in life. So the things I wanted in life didn't correlate with what my family wanted and things didn't go well. So from 2005, that's right after high school, I was out on the streets with kind of no place to go. And it just became a rough time for me.
Were you in trouble with the law?
No, it was just with my family.
Just didn't want to be home.
We just weren't on the same level. We didn't see things the same way.
And you were so not seeing eye to eye that you would rather had lived on the streets than be home.
Well, I was put out on the streets.
Oh, you were kicked off.
Yeah.
Kicked out of home. Oh, wow. And I've heard those types of stories too. What was your experience like being homeless, if you even consider yourself that at the time?
No, I was definitely homeless. And luckily, I still had like some money because I used to hustle and did some things back in the days. And so I had enough money where I would pay for a storage and I would keep my clothes and stuff put away. So I had my stuff was taken care of. And like, I was quick to figure out that there were places you can go take showers. So I wasn't going to be dirty. And then they would give you places to eat and do certain things. So I would hang out with my friends and they didn't know when I wasn't around them. I was sleeping at train stations. I was sleeping in the parks because I would, in the morning time, I'd wake up, I'd either go to the gym and shower and change or go to the location and get breakfast and change. And for a while, nobody knew what I was going through. I was just faking it.
That's wild. And that happens. I feel there's a lot of people out there that they're kind of like fake homeless in the sense of they're fly homeless. I don't call it fake homeless. It's fly homeless. You're able to manage, maintain, take showers, and nobody can tell that you're homeless, but you're actually homeless. There were a few people in life that I realized after hanging out with them long enough, wow, they're living in their car or maybe outside. I had this friend when I was in high school. His name was Helmet Head, and he was a former military guy, right? And he was living outside like Rambo, and he had a ton of money, just chose not to spend it on rent. Just would rather live like a Green Beret outside in the wilderness. So, I mean, it's doable. Do you think that, do you notice that now? Like, do you notice that a lot of people seem to be doing that, especially now while times are so tough?
I see that a lot of people are waking up, and I think that was a backfire on the, I don't know what kind of, if you guys are okay with talking a little bit of politics. I'm not really into politics, just the certain things I believe in. Yeah. And I feel like they backfired when they did this whole COVID thing and people were stuck at home because a lot of people, yeah, they wasted time, but a lot of people started studying and realized, hey, we can live off the grid. We can do more. And people started waking up to what they can do. And since then, it's been growing more and more. People are learning how to make survival kits and living off the grid and not working with the government or just learn more facts about the government that they didn't think was real and are waking up to a lot more things. And as much as the world would like to show that some of these things aren't true, a lot of people are learning the truth about the government and just are not happy where the things are going in America right now.
All the loopholes are out there now. Back in the day, you used to have to know how to steal the cable, right? Remember, one of the things that like you do as an American back in the 90s and the 80s was you'd steal cable vision, not pay for it. You'd have somebody sneak up on the telephone pole and wire it. Now those, you'd have to know somebody, right? There was that person in the neighborhood. Now you just Google it. It's like all the secrets are exposed, all the shortcuts, the matrix is broken. That is a very good point. And Trey, we're going to go to a very, very quick break because your story is compelling and we're just getting to it, man. We haven't even got to the good stuff. We're just in the midst of the struggle, the bounce back. And if you're listening and you're in the struggle and the bounce back, know that you can achieve greatness. Just do not give up and keep going. And, you know, especially it starts by not tuning out of your local radio programmer. So keep listening. We'll be back soon. This is the Ryan Show FM. Trade lovers with us. Love and fashion's in the building, and we shall return. Let's go.
Everybody say so, but I don't give a fudge. What do they know? Since I'm in my bag, and that's an Ellie though. I see you dizzy running circles, round and round you go. Hop on the plane, become a door like snow. I switch this up on you because I said the gangster rule. I pull it up, I got to, and I ain't talking domino. That's all on tap before them squeeze and let it go. Go girl, you the bomb. 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 Go girl, you the bomb.
Grab by the pussy.
You setting in, you frontin' like you do not rock with me. You're telling lies. Look at this nigga all on my IG. I got that marijuana, that sticky. I'm hot and suckin' B. I told him legalize that shit. Yo, KKK, come smoke with me. Impossible like Kimberly. My daddy stay like Junkati. I just fuck with everybody. Nobody better not fuck with me. I overkill for my family. You take L, I get G. I get money, so you get me. I want you, make me wet, B. Blow girl, you the bomb. 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 Blow girl, you the bomb.
Grab by the pussy.
Hotter than hell, I'm a bunny like fire. Double say I'm not, he's a liar. You never seen me coming like Trump, but my day, I'm a clean from front to back like a girl's perpetraria. Fake booty drop on the floor and cause hysteria. I'm outside cute, but how is it interior? Love on a black girl's twerk, like Asians go to work. Now own it like a Jew, need a bomb like a boo. Now love on a black girl's twerk, like Asians go to work. Now own it like a Jew, need a bomb like a boo. Go girl, you the bomb. 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 Go girl, you the bomb.
Grab her by the pussy.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Ryan Show FM, and you could be listening on the radio, you could be listening on the podcast platforms, but know that this is brought to you by our friends over at Vion and Sovereign Brands. If you're going to drink, it might as well be Vion. It's an amazing drink tray. It truly is. It's a cognac, and it tastes like vanilla Coke. I really enjoy it thoroughly, especially when it's mixed with milk. A lot of people think I'm crazy for this, but sometimes I'll make me a little White Russian, a little White Russian villain. I like to call it the Vladimir Putin. I stay sipping on that Putin. Shouts to our pals over at BeyondSovereignBrands.com. I'm sitting here with Trey Lover, and we're going through an incredible story, a true come up. I mean, it all began in an entirely different country, Guyana, right? Am I saying that right?
Guyana.
Guyana. Sorry, yeah. It's my Long Island accent, or just my dumb person accent. But started in Guyana, made it over here at the age of 6. And I mean, look, it's a cultural struggle moving to the States, no matter who you are. And my man faced it. He got kicked out the house. He was out on the streets homeless and had a bounce back from that to where he is right now, where he's in control of Love and Fashion and throwing some of the biggest events in New York City. So we're gonna get right back to the middle of this story here, Trey. You're out on the streets. What's the turning point that kind of helped you pull it in by the reins, and what made you decide to, you know, kind of go back to civilization?
Things just started getting rough, man. I was getting sick a lot, and my health wasn't really in a manageable state. And I just had to start taking care of myself. So I had to really step back from doing everything and really focus on me. I got myself into a shelter and just started trying to do a little bit better. And actually, while in the shelter, this was in 2008, from November to December, for around 30 days, I was in the hospital. I got really sick, almost died. And it's just, I had a moment while I was in the hospital where I just prayed to God, and I asked God to show me a reason to live, because I didn't even want to live anymore. And as soon as I finished that prayer, my phone rang, and it was a phone call I didn't expect to get. And I said, I just have to do better than this.
There's layers to this story, and one of the most important components to it, which we I'm not sure if we actually mentioned in the beginning of this show, was that you're fighting sickle cell at the same time. As all of this is going down, all of this transition from one country to another, and, you know, most important, being out on the streets. I mean, first off, to those that don't know what sickle cell is, I feel like a lot of the Caucasian community fails to really understand what it is and how it affects a human being. They can go to Wikipedia and look it up. But I mean, what's it like, first off, living with that disease?
Living with sickle cell, it's adapting to life. Everything is different. We have to handle things differently than the average person. But then at the same time, we're, in a sense, too healthy to really get help. But then we're too sick to be able to do certain things. And we have to learn how to function in the middle of life. And so it's really just being able to maneuver. And it's a hard battle. But if you don't learn how to maneuver, you just get stuck in poverty, honestly speaking.
When did you find out you were diagnosed with it?
I've known about sickle cell my entire life. It's something I've known about since in Guyana as a child. I was diagnosed with it. My actually older sister, who passed away before I was born, she died from complications with sickle cell. So it's been a part of my life since birth. We've known about sickle cell forever. We weren't educated on what sickle cell was back then, what really to do about living with sickle cell.
What are some of those misconceptions that you see out there that you feel that should be cleared up while you're on the radio talking about it?
Misconceptions. I've heard people think it's contagious. It's not contagious. It's hereditary. It means you can only be born with it. It's passed down from your parents to the child. You have a higher chance if both parents have it than if one parent has it. So it's hereditary. So someone cannot give you sickle cell. That's something when I'm growing up in school, people who found out I had sickle cell were really afraid to come around me because they thought I would give it to them. We get told that it's not that bad and people are overreacting. The pain isn't excruciating. It is a debilitating pain that you can never even begin to bear. And the best way I can put in perspective and the kind of pain severity you can put into is I met a group of women who have sickle cell and have also given birth. And which pain do you think they'd rather suffer through many times over? And they just dealing with what we have to go through is a debilitating pain where grown men will be curled up in a ball and you can't move. And you never know when it's going to happen. So you just have to be ready, try to be ready whenever for it to hit you.
Insane. Just brutal, man, that you have to go through that. And to think that you came back from a bout with actual homelessness and then were able to maintain and people didn't even know, like you said, your friends thought that everything was normal. And would you say that do your friends and do your support system like come out and help you like knowing what you're going through? I mean, just to think like if I had a friend that had that type of illness and was struggling, I feel like you have to help. I mean, what have you found it's like with your support system dealing with all that?
I mean, I say this for some of them, I never gave them the opportunity to offer me that help because I hid it so well that they didn't know I was going through something. But for the very few that I did open up to, they were very receptive of what I was going through. These were people who some of them I'm still cool with today, or we are still acquaintances. And the ones who knew my situation, they would let me crash on the couch sometime or take a shower or just charge my phone or be able to use the computer to try to apply for jobs or something. So they were helpful. Of course, at that time, we were at a very young age, so we're still living with our parents at that time. So it's not like I can stay with any of them, but just being able to get off the streets once in a while was helpful.
You know, they say it takes a village, and that's truly one of those situations where sometimes, you know, things happen with parents and their children and their spats and altercations, and hopefully, I hope that everything got tied up and things are okay now with you and your parents. That's where the village comes in and to like, you know, community. And that's what you're building right now with Love and Fashion. So you leave you find yourself better. You go to a homeless shelter. And when was it that you decided that you would actually start doing something to help others? Did you help yourself first and get yourself out of that situation before you started Love and Fashion and started building a way to actually help others with sickle cell?
For me, honestly, it was weird. I've always had this habit of liking to give back. So back then, I used to always try to just volunteer and just do things whenever I could. So if it was an event dealing with sickle cell and just giving out pamphlets or doing something, I would volunteer. But I volunteered a lot of different events, just packing up gifts in Christmas times or serving food or cleaning parks and stuff like that. I just like doing stuff. And when I first started Love and Fashion around 2011, it wasn't really, we weren't really giving back. I was just trying to build a name for myself at that time. But I was still like doing my own volunteer things whenever I could. But it got more seriously focused on giving back around, I could say, 2019. 2018, we got a little serious about giving back and we started giving out more where we donated some to Wounded Warriors, some breast cancer, some to sickle cell. And then in 2022, I started donating a lot more to sickle cell awareness. And I started saying, you know what? I said, because I was listening to some of the gurus I listened to on social medias and through different platforms, and a lot of them talked about aligning yourself with the cause. And I said, all right, so I already have a cause and that I fight for with sickle cell. And if I have to link my brand with the cause, I'm going to link sickle cell, Love and Fashion with sickle cell. So now in that period, we started saying everything we did, we're going to give back a portion to sickle cell awareness. How can we donate to people and help out people that have sickle cell disease?
And when I met you, I believe it was 2018, but you were focused on giving back and every different event was to give back. And to my knowledge, it was really the only series of events in New York, at least like within the hip hop community that I would be attending, where there was an actual give back and you were doing something bigger than just throwing a party. Do you feel like there's a lot of responsibility on your shoulders now that you have this platform?
I feel like I have to bring my insight into it and do as much as possible to bring awareness, because there's a very big rift in a lot of the individuals in the sickle cell community, between the unidentified population, which is categorized as individuals who have not been seen by a sickle cell specialist within a year. And these people who are not being seen, they're literally dying internally and don't know it, because people don't know about the other effects of sickle cell than just the pain. Most people think it's just the pain. And I understand that there's a way I can use my platform from doing parties and events to connecting with that group of individuals so they can start getting seen again, by especially by understanding what's happening to them. So now being able to use Love and Fashion to put on sickle cell awareness events, where it's bridging the gap between the community board organizations and the community to getting these young individuals involved, it's a platform that I have to be able to say I'm going to stay there and give my all for it. Because if I don't, I'm not going to wait for the next person to figure it out. Everyone waits for the next person. Why? I have the time, I have the space, I have the capacity. I just have to do it, because if I don't, what's going to happen?
You know, you're absolutely right. Because there's not a lot of people that step up. A lot of people, and especially because like physically they can't. Like you have sickle cell, you're going through immense pain. Like for you to step up and still organize these events amidst what you're going through is just incredible. And you've partnered up recently with a very big organization, a very big company. And we're going to get into that, the partnership with Pfizer and how they are helping power Love and Fashion these days, because there's a lot of stigmas that might need to be erased, or maybe, you know, hear a little bit of both sides of. And we're going to get into it. We've got the owner of Love and Fashion, who's doing a great thing here on this planet, bringing awareness to sickle cell disease. Trey Lover is here with us, hanging and banging, baby. And Trey, let's plug that Instagram quickly. Where exactly are you on the IG?
On Instagram, we have two pages. They're both Love and Fashion _. Then one is bookings, one is apparel. So LoveandFashion _bookings or _apparel. And both of those are my pages.
I love it. We're hanging and banging, no diddy, here on the Ryan Show FM, and we shall return. Let's go. Doing it.
whenever, yeah, 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 yeah. I'll see you through. I've got to keep you pleased in every way I can. Gonna give you all of me as much as you can stand. Make love to you right now, that's all I wanna do. Girl, and you know I needed to, cause I found what the world is searching for. Here, right here, my dear, I don't have to look no more. In all my days, I've hoped and I've prayed for someone just like you. Make me feel the way you do. Never, never gonna give you up. I'm never ever gonna stop. Not the way I feel about you. Girl, I just can't live without you. I'm never ever gonna quit, cause
quit. E-cells ain't loyal. Come out for a night to remember. Filled with laughter, music to raise awareness for sickle cell while learning about what's happening in the community. Make sure to meet some of the staff from various pharmaceuticals as they speak about some of the new medications that have been recently or will shortly be introduced to the world that are helping change the lives of people living with sickle cell disease. The time is coming for our next edition of The Cells Ain't Loyal. It's happening this Saturday night. That's the 29th or 30th?
That's the 30th.
The 30th. I'm sorry. That's right. March 30th.
Saturday, March 30th.
This Saturday night, it is going down in New York City. If you're in the tri-state area, you definitely want to be there. This event is organized, as always, by our friends over at Love & Fashion. They can be followed on Instagram at @LoveAndFashion_apparel or at @LoveAndFashion_bookings. Go to the IG and purchase your tickets now. There's a link in their bio that you can purchase them at. There's going to be guest speakers from Pfizer there. From Emmaus. Am I saying that right?
Emmaus.
Emmaus. Guest speakers from Emmaus, Pfizer, and Vertex. Scary sounding names, but you know what? They're going to lighten the load. You can meet the people in person. They're not AI. They're not robots. You can question them and press them about whatever you want. Or maybe not. I don't mean, maybe we don't want to make anything too crazy at this event. But they're going to be there speaking, and it's hosted by Lizzie Chanel. 100% of the profits from this event are being donated to sickle cell awareness, and the current donations are at $5,000 or more, the goal for 2024. He said here, $10,000, but we're going for $10 trillion. We want to raise as much money as possible this year. And shouts to the partners and sponsors of this event. There's a bunch of at names listed here. You can go to the Instagram and find out. But Trey Lover is here to tell us more about this great event coming up and how he's partnered up with some big companies such as Pfizer to erase the stigma behind sickle cell and bring awareness. Also, shouts to my man DJ Light that's going to be DJing at this event. Love my man DJ Light. So, what do we have to look forward to, man? Before we even get into the partnership with Pfizer, what do we have to look forward to at these Cells Ain't Loyal?
I mean, come out for the entertainment, come out for the knowledge, come out to learn, come out to have fun. It's a mixture of both. My events is tailored to bringing out individuals to have a good time while being brought up in awareness with sickle cell disease. So it's not just a boring event. We're going to sit down and just be preached to. We want you guys to enjoy the event at the same time.
Awesome. And you partnered up with Pfizer. Today I mentioned Pfizer to a friend of mine and he gasped. He dropped his coffee. He said, how could you be working with those monsters? And I said, dude, what kind of TikTok videos are you sitting there and scrolling through all day? Pfizer has also created many great medicines and you've partnered up with them for this event. So if you could tell us a little bit more about this partnership with Pfizer and what do they have going on these days?
For what I can say right now is Pfizer has a heart for the sickle cell community. And they have been with us from preparation to making sure this event happens. Their charitable contribution to us is what's being able to help us fund to get this next event to come to pass. Working with their staff, they're having conversations with them. There's a lot of future activities they're planning. And just say, keep an eye. We're going to be dropping those dates and stuff really soon through our social media platforms at SCTPN and our Instagram platforms at Love & Fashion and our websites. Because Pfizer has a lot that's happening in the sickle cell community, and they've really been a great hand with working with us.
You know, it's any of these big, giant companies. You want to dig deep, you're going to find skeletons in the closet. But at least they're doing the right thing with their marketing budget. At least they're helping my man Trey Lover. and putting a good cause out there. I will say that much. But Trey, man, it's just been an honor to sit down with you, and I'm so excited about the event and to see what you're doing and to hear your comeback story. So before we do, I just want to know a little bit more about Love and Fashion, because we need to give you your roses, man. You're throwing these wild ass events. There's people now that can literally hire and book you to make their events even better. So if you could tell us a little bit more about the business end of what you got going on with Love and Fashion, because you're out here growing and getting it. So, I mean, what's it been like evolving the business of it to where it is now, where you have all these events under your belt?
Oh, man, this has been a dream come true with the business portion of the event. They say turn your hobby into your business and you really feel like you never work a day in your life. And I used to love partying, so I turned partying into my business. So now my company is an event planning company with a staffing agency that also does reservations and bookings. So our clients come to us from the conception of the event, just trying to plan it, put together what they want to put together for their event. And then we can help them execute it and staff it and purchase the rentals and plan for the event. And everything is housed within our company. We take care of all the paperwork for them. We take care of all the payments. We book everything out for them. So all of our managerial staff that we have is just a data pool of just years and experience of data working together. And we've been able to work with some great clients to put together some wonderful events, from weddings to baby showers to fundraisers, charitable events. And these are all some events that utilize our security guards, our photographers, our DJs, our caterers, our balloon decorators. One of our many services just somehow possible to make their events happen. The clients love that everything is in one location. They don't have to worry about who are we going to call for the photographer, who are we going to call for the security, who are we going to call for the DJ. No, we can just call this one company, or you can literally just go to the website, fill out the form that asks you all those specific questions you may not have thought about asking, and you let us know what you need, and we start planning your event for you.
I love it. So, I mean, if you have a budget, come correct, because this is where you go. I mean, it takes money to throw a good party. I've learned this the hard way many times. I always try to fashion together a party without a budget, and it just turns out miserable, unless, of course, it's some type of weekly party. But that's why you hire a team like Love and Fashion to come through. My man Trey Lover making that party that much better, taking that party in expertise. Dude, it's been such an honor to have you. And thanks for telling me a little bit more about this horrible illness. What do we have to look forward to in terms of medicine and the future of treating sickle cell?
Right now, there's many things happening in the sickle cell world. Just December 8th just passed. They just released two new gene therapies for sickle cell that's been helping people already. We were in a live Zoom the other day where young man, he's been on the treatment, and he grew up with sickle cell, and now for the past 3 years, he hasn't had one crisis after going through the gene therapy. There are new companies with new medications and new apps that are being created for sickle cell disease. A lot happening right now. Now is a fantastic time for anybody who wants to be involved, to make something happen, to come on board and to just see not what I can do, but who I can do it with, because there's always something happening right now.
So, I mean, even your experience living with this disease, has it at least progressively gotten better in terms of the treatment and care and medicine that's available to you?
I will say yes, there's better care that's for me. And there's a lot of stuff right now that they've found and more treatments that are available for the younger population. So there's stuff that I may have aged out of being beneficial to me, but for the younger generation, there are treatments that are helping. Personally, my younger sister, and she was much younger, her sickle cell was horrible. And she got the bone marrow therapy transplant. And now she's living a fantastic, beautiful life. She just had her daughter. A lot of people with sickle cell, they say as a mother, you can't have a child. There's so much stigmas out there. But now she's a mother and she's doing excellent. She's working. And there's more and more people that are getting better cares and better lifestyle changes. So there's so much happening right now that's changing in the community with sickle cell.
That is beautiful, man. Beautiful to hear about your sister. Beautiful to hear that there is progress. And there is a chance that things are going to get better. And medicine's only going to get better over time with whatever it is. I truly believe that, unless the government's trying to, you know, pull some wicked conspiracy. Pfizer. No, just kidding. Wait, you know what I'm saying? The guys that are out there preventing you from actually creating. I had a great guest on recently, Dr. Natanya Wachtel, and she told me there's a lot of politics behind medicine, which does kind of leave me skeptical. It's almost like certain things can't get done because of the money and the impact on money that it might have if something is healed. but hopefully sickle cell is not one of those things. So shouts to Love and Fashion, Trey Lover, and everyone else that tries to bring awareness to this horrible illness. And folks, don't go anywhere. We've got a lot more great stuff going on this radio program right here tonight. This is The Ryan Show FM, and you can follow my man Trey Lover at loveandfashion_apparel on IG and loveandfashion_bookings. Thanks for joining us, Trey. Is there any last words that you'd like to leave our listeners off with tonight?
I would like to say out there, too, right now there's a very big need for people to donate blood in the sickle cell community. So please go and donate blood. You can go to any New York Blood Center. You can go to the hospital. You can find out. And you can use our code, is it SCTPN, when you go to donate blood for the company that I work for, Sickle Cell Thalassemia Patients Network, and let them know that you want to donate blood on our behalf, because they are special blood types that some people with sickle cell need, and it's a very rare blood type. So the more people, especially more Black people that donate blood, it helps out a lot. So please go and donate blood if you're able to. We appreciate you.
That's right. Donate that blood, folks. This is The Ryan Show FM. Do the right thing. Random act of kindness. Let it be donating your blood today. We shall return. And before we talk sports, we must talk history. And who better to join us tonight than my pal, the great Joseph Hill, who you've heard on this program so many times, delving into some topics that sometimes we might not be digging deeply into as much as we should. As we know, a lot of history was whitewashed. We're going to learn a little bit about World War One. Sometimes, Joseph, I stay up late at night watching World War One documentaries. There's a lot more videos out there of high-res footage shot right from the trenches, just disturbing, horrible videos of the Great War, as it was called back then. And there's one component that always seems to be left out no matter how many history documentaries I make, and that's what happens with the Black people that fought in these wars. And it starts with the Harlem Hellfighters that we're about to learn about today. So, Joseph, before we get into it, how are you, my friend?
I'm well. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
It's always an honor, my friend. And I'm excited to learn more about these Harlem Hellfighters. The little bit that I do know about history, I know that Black people were not treated with any respect whatsoever in 1914 through 1920. In fact, it was some of the most horrible, hard, racist times that humans could possibly go through. So to think that men went and fought overseas for a country that treated them that way, it just still blows my mind. I know we talked a little bit about the Black Civil War soldiers. You've got your documentary coming out. But this is an even more intriguing time to me because they're supposed to be free, yet they're not given freedoms, and they have to go off and fight overseas, technically not even for their country, right? It's Europe that was at stake. What are your thoughts, first off, on the treatment of Blacks during the World War One period by the military? Like, what kind of hardships did they face just being in the military, having to go over there in the first place, besides getting shot at by Germans?
Well, first of all, the military is a reflection of the larger society. So, you know, before they were ever in the military, they were facing racism. When the unit was first formed, and it was mostly Black men from Harlem, there were people from some upstate cities, a few people from New Jersey, Connecticut, but the majority of them were from Harlem. But they were mistreated even as a unit, and what they had to go through to be able to fight, they had to overcome racism. You know, back in the day, because, you know, I'm not a young guy, but when my parents were raising me, there was like an adage in my community back then, you don't hear it anymore, that in order to get a job, in order to do whatever you had to do, you had to be two times better than the white man. Because so much stuff was against you and people didn't want you to succeed until you, you know, there were a lot of Jackie Robinsons. Just in
that mindset fields. Really carries over to success, let's be honest. I mean, yeah. That's wild.
I'm just saying back in the day, that was a mantra.
That's crazy.
You know, you had to be twice as good. Otherwise, you weren't going to advance at all. And it was a similar thing with the 369th unit, which they eventually were called. Originally, when they were formed, first of all, it took a couple of years to get them formed because of racism and politics. And Governor Whitman, for a long time, resisted. There were all kind of people in Harlem and all kind of politicians saying, we got these Black men, they want to fight. We want to be part of this. Because the United States back up a little bit, didn't enter World War One when it began in 1914, as you know. There was a huge resistance. A lot of people didn't really, you know, they said, like they're saying now about Ukraine, which is foolish, isolationism. You know, that's their war. It has nothing to do with us. And it took President Woodrow Wilson, who, as you know, is not one of my favorite people, but on this point, he was right. But it took a long time to get the U.S. involved in joining European countries to fight against the Germans and the Austrians and the Turks, by the way. Those were the Axis powers. Anyway, but there was a preparation before the U.S. entered the war. Like I said, the war is already going on in Europe, started in 1914, and we fast forward, it's 1917, and it's inevitable that the U.S. is going to enter the war. Once again, there was a push politically to have black fighting men go, and, well, big resistance. But they finally went, well, finally formed a unit, and originally they were a National Guard unit. They were the 15th New York National Guard. But then when they incorporated into the army, the larger army, they became the 369th.
Do you know what the attitude was like back then towards the government if you were a black soldier and you were recruited? Because it wasn't back then. Was it a volunteer draft? So did the majority of these guys get drafted or sign up?
No, they were volunteers. They wanted to fight. Yeah, these were guys straight out of Harlem. They wanted for a lottery, and the same thing happened in the Civil War. Same thing happened with the Buffalo Soldiers out west. And the same thing happens with Native Americans when we talked about the Japanese unit. It's a psychology of when you're a minority in America and you're a male, you want to prove your manhood, that you are equal, that you are a man. Sounds sexist now, but back then that was the attitude. And what better way to prove that you were a man was in war, in combat. Conversely, with the racism, all the racist tropes and lies said that black men not only were ignorant and afraid, but that they wouldn't fight, that they weren't brave, that they didn't have cojones. And so you get men in Harlem who wanted to counter that by saying, well, train us and give us guns and let's see if we can fight. So for them, it was more than fighting for freedom, fighting for the Allies. It was also a civil rights movement.
That's wild. And one that's not as talked about. I feel like that's something that kind of gets glossed over. People like,
but they
generally
wanted equality. Yeah, but yeah. But the once again, the thought then was, we're going to get our equality because we're going to prove we're men and we're going to fight, and then we're going to get equality when we come back home. Wow. And of course, that didn't happen. But
so what are some of the perils that the Harlem Hellfighters faced out there? I mean, were they in the trenches?
Well, before that, let's back up just a little bit. It's so pathetic until you just heard me half chuckle. Guess where they were trained?
Don't tell me Robert E. Lee's.
Spartanburg, South Carolina. Think about it. This is the 19-teens, and they send black men from New York in Yankee in uniforms and to train in South Carolina. Wow. And it was a miracle that there wasn't a riot, literally, in South Carolina, because of the way they were treated.
Was there segregation in the military down there?
Of course. Wow. There was segregation. But it's not segregation I'm talking about. Yeah. I am talking about out and out blatant racist treatment of these black Northerners training. They were called the N-word every day. Noble Sissel, who I don't know how many of people in the age group that we're focusing on would know who Noble Sissel is. There was a movie that came out that I think won some Oscars. I want to say it was in the 70s or 80s, called Ragtime, taken from a book and a play and then made into a movie. Well, Noble Sissel was one of the great composers and musician of the ragtime era. And he was in the Harlem Hellfighters, the 369th. Long story short, Noble Sissel goes into a hotel lobby in Spartanburg, South Carolina, to buy a newspaper, and is beaten and kicked out. And it almost caused a riot because soldiers came back with their guns to find out what the hell had happened. So that's before they ever were shipped out. Like I said, but if you think about the stupidity, I can say that now, of sending these guys to South Carolina to train, it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, of all places that you're going to.
What do you think is going to happen? So anyway, they finally get to Europe. And General Blackjack Pershing, the U.S. Army didn't really want these guys as fighting men. So when they first go to Europe, they're digging ditches. They're cleaning latrines. They're doing everything. They're doing all the support stuff, building roads, but they're not letting them fight, which was typical.
They say, I don't know how true it is, but 350,000 black soldiers served in World War I, and pretty much all of them, it says, were just, like you said, laboring behind the scenes.
Right. So, but here's the caveat. Here's the crux of the story. The U.S. Army didn't want them fighting, but the French were short of men. So the U.S. military said, we'll give you this unit. And the French were like, hell yeah, we'll take them. 2,000 fighting men, we'll take them. So basically, they were fighting under the auspices of the French government, not the U.S.
Wow. So technically, were they wearing U.S. uniforms or French?
They wore U.S. uniforms, but it was French generals who were kind of running the show. And they were in France. They were on what... And for people who don't, if you've seen any video, the movie 1917, which hopefully some of the audience saw, great movie about World War I, it was trench warfare. It was basically a stalemate all of the war. But most of the time, the soldiers were in trenches because there was shelling going on, and it was the first war that used a lot of chemical warfare. So there was gas. So a lot of people died either from the shelling or from gas. And it was rare that they actually faced German soldiers and actually shot because they were at a distance. You know, you get your head blown up. If your timing was poor and you stuck your head up from the trench, you know, you could lose your life.
Yeah, that's
and the trenches were awful, too, because the trenches were full of water and rats and.
That's what I've heard. Apparently, disease killed more people than anything in those trenches.
All, in all wars, it does. But especially at that time. So anyway, they arrived, get this, they arrived in France January 1st, 1918. The beginning of 1918. And as they come off the dock, and there's a big crowd, talk about their treatment. The French were happy to see them. I mean, the French citizens. They were cheering and the whole deal, right? As they're coming off, the one brilliant thing that the U.S. military did, and I don't know why they did it, and I'd like to investigate, one brilliant thing that they did, though, guess who escorted them and came with the 369th? Was great, and it was all military, a jazz band led by James Reese Europe, who nobody ever heard of, who was at the time the biggest black band leader in America, and they could play. So when they came off, listen to this, when they came off the boat and the band was playing, remember the French hadn't heard jazz ever, but guess what they did, what the first tune that they played was? It's the French national anthem, the Marseillaise. The Marseillaise.
Okay.
The French started listening and they were like, what? That's our anthem. Only they put it to jazz.
That's a nice first impression. That'll last forever.
So right away, the French love these guys.
That's great.
And they love the music. And James Reese Europe.
So literally the biggest jazz band at the time went overseas to accompany this unit.
And they were part of the unit.
And they were part of the unit. That's insane.
James Reese Europe was actually an officer.
Those were the days when the celebrities and the entertainers fought in wars.
And right? there were celebrities in the Harlem. Horace Pippin, once again, was a great Harlem Renaissance painter. He was in that unit.
Wow. Yeah, back then, that's when it was normal. There's not many celebrities in our time, or at least the last 20 years, my time, I should say, that went off and fought overseas.
But Grant, that goes to proving you're a man. If you're a black man and you're a celebrity, yeah, you're going to be in the military. Why not? You're proving it. You're proving, A, you're an American citizen. You're also proving you're a man. And you're proving your courage. All right. So they're over there and they're in the trenches. And there's two guys in trenches and it's at night, right? And they can hear, okay, so what separated the troops a lot of times was barbed wire. There's two Harlem hellfighters in the trenches and they're hearing snipping. They're hearing wire cutters cutting barbed wire. And it's just the two of them and they're going, these are the Germans and they're coming. So a guy named, he's a private named Henry Johnson, throws a flare and then a grenade. And then all hell breaks loose. There's all this shooting. And the Germans start coming into the trench with these two guys. Like two dozen Germans jump in the trench with them. And they have to fight these two dozen Germans. Henry Johnson is shot and wounded like about four times. He shoots the first one in the chest. He takes his the gun and uses it as a club and starts clubbing guys. He takes his knife and drives his knife through the skull of one of the Germans. Meanwhile, the other guy with him is wounded, and the Germans grab this guy, and they're trying to take him with them. And my man is shooting them and beating them, so he saves his partner who's with them. He ends up killing something like four or five Germans, and then he throws hand grenades into their group, and they get out of there. And when all this is found out, Henry Johnson becomes the most celebrated soldier, American soldier. Like, there's newspaper articles all about him, and that's where the legend of the Harlem Hellfighters begins. And no one knows where the name comes from except, you know, they call themselves the Rattlers, by the way, and their symbol was a rattlesnake. But, you know, white newspapers in America start calling them the Hellfighters. Word was that the Germans said that these guys fought like devils from hell.
And that's where the name comes from.
That's how they got the nickname, the Harlem Hellfighters.
War does that to you. Those trenches do that to you. That is insane.
Another thing about the trenches, you know, I'm throwing movies out here because I'm a movie guy, but some movies actually teach you. One is 1917. If you haven't seen it, see it. It's about the British, but it's World War. It's a great story. Great story. And I believe it's a true story. The other one, though, is anybody, do you remember the movie? And it's Legends of the Fall.
Yeah, that was a great one with Brad Pitt.
Well, remember how Tristan fought in World War II. World War One, rather. That was World War One. Remember, he went into the trenches and started scalping people and cutting their throats. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
There were actually people, and we'll talk about this at another time, two great British poets who were both gay, by the way, who fought the same way. They fought that war like possessed men. They would go out of the trenches and go find Germans and kill them.
You wouldn't want to get behind them either.
No, like what? That ain't right.
I know it ain't. But that's definitely a story in itself. Wow. People were just cut different. You know, war is becoming, I don't want to say like AI, although we might see that someday. But I feel like it was just so much more hands-on. And that was a really weird time in between real hand-to-hand combat, the emergence of chemical weapons, the very first aerial warfare. Everything was just cruder, for lack of better words. Like just cruder form of warfare.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm getting a little off the subject, but all wars are always fought behind the technology. In other words, the technology, the way people kill people, is always better than the strategy of the war. Because when they first start a war, the generals are fighting that war the way they fought the last war.
That's right.
So you end up, remember, and well, people who don't know, but when World War I first started, we had a cavalry. The U.S. military still had a cavalry. Think about the absurdity of having men on horseback during World War I. But they started out with soldiers on horses charging. And, of course, they all got killed.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we can't have a cavalry. That
not with the machine guns around.
So I'm just saying wars always fall behind. The strategies fall behind the technology. There are always newer and better ways of killing people than the people who strategize for the wars. And that happened in World War I. But back to one thing I did leave out about talking about Henry Johnson. Henry Johnson received from the French the Croix de Guerre, which is the cross of the warrior. The French awarded him that.
Medal of Honor?
It's like a Medal of Honor, but he didn't get it from the U.S. He got it from the French.
He never got a Medal of Honor?
I'll tell you that later. During his lifetime, no, he did not.
And that is where we're going to end this on a cliffhanger, because we have to talk sports. But Joseph, thanks for joining us. As always, we're going to come back. We're going to preview Major League Baseball. It is finally opening day. I don't even want to have you here because we all know you think the Cubs are going to win it like always. But we'll see what happens with their new manager, Craig Counsell. He might just be my pick for manager of the year in the National League. We'll see soon. Joseph, thanks for joining us. Nobody go anywhere, folks. This is the Ryan Show FM, and we shall return. The birds are a-chirping, the bees are buzzing, which means it's that time of the year. Spring has returned. You can just smell it. It's lighter when you step outside. Even though it's a little bit cold, you can just feel it coming, which means that baseball is finally here. And who better to bring than give our predictions and preview Major League Baseball than my pal Franco Van Durka. You hear us at What's Going On. You hear Franco on the oven. And now you hear us tonight on the Ryan Show FM. Franco, what's happening, Captain?
What's going on, my man? The last Monday without baseball until October. Let's go. I love it.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot wait to get my hands on a baseball, throw some balls around, no ditty. It is going down. And my favorite part, it's also T-ball season, Franco. So I'm going to have to call upon your services because I'm taking up the role of assistant coach in East Quad T-ball.
Maybe no it's going way. Down. Are you really? Yeah. That's amazing, man.
Oh, that's man. Right. I'm like the future butter maker, but it all gets started with my young seed, Thomas Vernell, who plans on being the next Aaron Judge. For some reason, he tells me all the time, he's like, Dad, I only like Aaron Judge. I don't like anyone else. I'm like, dude, keep that energy away from me. Save that energy for the Red Sox.
Right.
I'm trying to get him into Garrett Cole and the rest of the guys that are throwing some heat.
That's it, man. I'll definitely let me know the schedule, man. I would love to come to that. That would be a show.
It'll be like an oven special. Get Mario down there. I can see that. It would be incredible. But Franco, it's finally that time. We came up with some predictions, and we actually came up with not just predictions for winners of awards, but who's going to win it all this year.
Yep.
And I think that my winner might surprise some people, considering I'm wearing a New York Yankees hat right now.
Oh, no. I don't like the way this sounds already.
I put the bias to the side, finally.
Finally. Okay. No, you know what? I do like this then. I do like this. We're going to be... There's no tainted votes here. This is going to be nice and easy then.
I started seeing a sports therapist, and we're not even a legit therapy sesh, but we started talking about how deep and dark it goes, about how my emotions, and you witnessed this firsthand, my emotions in real life are tied to a sports team.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
In all seasons too.
Yeah. Not even when they're playing.
Like, yeah, exactly.
The last time I cried was when Juan Soto was traded for it.
But those are happy tears. Those are good tears.
Still, that's a dark place that I'm living in. If that's what it takes, it's just a really sad thing. And that being said, I'm putting the bias to the side as we put these predictions out here. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure, besides, of course, the MVP, it's obviously going to be a New York Yankee. Besides that, all bias has been put to the side. So, Franco, why don't we get started before we pick who we think is going to win the World Series this year and who's going to come on top with the AL East? No ditty. It's a new thing. We got to also instill this.
That's it.
It's everybody's brain here. But let's start with our season predictions and rookie of the year. Who do you got for the American League Rookie of the Year going into the 2024 MLB season?
Man, so I got to go with one of the young men from the Texas Rangers. You know, Evan Carter made his debut last year. The role that he played in that World Series, you know, and the playoffs, it really showed that he has what it takes to be a star in this league. He has the poise. He slows the game down. He has really super good at-bats, which you love to see out of a rookie. For me, and it's tough because Wyatt Langford, you know, the fourth overall pick in the 2023 draft, just last season, you know, he's also coming up and he's starting in the road. He's starting on the squad. So, you know, I can and you should expect some growing pains, you know, from the young kid. You know, he hasn't even really seen a full season in AAA, AA. So coming up here is going to be something for, you know, to really test his emotions, see if he can slow the game down. So just for that reason in itself, the experience, I'm going to go with Evan Carter.
Which is a smart move to make, considering as a rookie, he helped put the Texas Rangers on his back at points.
For sure,
he
man.
He was killing it.
And it's crazy that he still has the eligibility to be a rookie. So
yeah, right, because he didn't play enough of last season. Now, I had Evan Carter as my American League Rookie of the Year, and I switched it up with the guy that you mentioned. His teammate,
Wyatt
who's going to be replacing him in the outfield when he wants to sit down on the bench, and that is Wyatt Langford. Like you mentioned, fourth pick of the 2023 draft, who's killing it in spring training.
Killing it. He is showing early signs of being, you know, what exactly the Texas Rangers thought he was going to be.
And he looks like an old school baseball player. He's got the face of like a 1940s baseball player.
And he's old. You know what I'm talking about? And he's old ham hands, man. You see the size of his hands? He's got
I'm too busy looking at the size of his nose and his facial features. And that's not a knock. He looks like a Sandy Koufax of sorts. Like, you know, they had that kind of like freakish look to him.
Yep,
he's just bound to be a star, like an old school baseball star. And he can hit and he can play all four positions in the outfield. He's a weapon coming off the bench for the Texas Rangers. And what's also great is that it just gives so much more versatility, man. We're going to get into who we think is going to be winning it all later, but those Rangers are looking scary. And Wyatt Langford is looking like a beast. I could see him also having immediate success. Because sometimes, you know, there's some growing pains, like you mentioned, but I feel like he's going to come out with a bang and have that competition on the same team to make him that much better. So we've got the National League Rookie of the Year. And I'll start with saying that my man, who I kind of wish the Yankees had signed, but that's just because I'm a selfish, greedy New Yorker, and that's Jung-Hoo Lee.
Okay.
Jung-Hoo Lee. Because we could just stack that outfield. But let's not make it about us. I talked to my therapist, my sports therapist about this. And Jung-Hoo Lee and the San Francisco Giants. Let's take it back to Aaron Judge, or I should say their newest signing. Who is it that they just got this offseason that we almost had? Oh, Blake Snell.
Blake Snell.
Okay, so the San Francisco Giants are looking pretty good. And I have a guy like Jung-Hoo Lee out there. And once again, it's weird that these guys can even qualify as Rookie of the Year. Because, you know, it's either really between him or Yamamoto. I feel are like the two safest bets for Rookie of the Year. But both these guys have careers already overseas and have a level of success. We watched him play in the College World Series. He did really well. So I think Jung-Hoo Lee, he can do it all. He's a leadoff hitter that can actually put the bat on the ball, which no one on the Giants seems to be able to do over the past few years, right? So they have a real leadoff hitter now. I think Jung-Hoo Lee's and he's a great outfielder.
Yeah.
He's got it all.
Yep, coming in.
And he's got K-pop face.
I like that pick, man. You mentioned it's either between him and you know, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I have to stick with my guns here. You know, I'm not a Dodger hater. I'm a baseball fan, so I do genuinely enjoy watching, you know, any team play. But, you know, Yoshinobu's first start didn't go as planned. I think it's a little, you know, going to light a little fire under him and help him. I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened was get that start out of the way, get it done early, settle in for a long season ahead of you. He's just got such a big, you know, squad behind him, you know, offensively, defensively. You know, you got Mookie Betts who you can slide into six of the nine positions and he'll be a star. So just with that being said, you know, a guy needs to have good defense behind him and a team that puts up runs. So I don't see there's no reason that that Yoshi doesn't win NL Rookie of the Year.
Absolutely. Got to agree. I mean, if it's not Jung-Hoo, it could be Yamamoto. So we did see him have that degree of success against American players. Everybody that says, oh, well, he did this in Japan. Well, we watched him dominate in the World Baseball Classic. So
yeah, and I'm really high on Jackson Chourio also. He's just, I don't know if he has the squad to get him, to push him to that NL Rookie of the Year. You know, I think he's going to be up in the voting. I think it'll be number two and number three, but I just don't know if he's going to have the amount of success, you know, as a squad that, that Yoshi will have with the Dodgers. So
I think you could be right. We shall see. We'll be looking back at the end of the year to see who was correct.
Mm-hmm.
Which of our foreign picks came out on top. Now, for DH of the year, you didn't realize it was a category. I don't think most people do. Yeah. I think most baseball, even intense baseball fans like yourself, might not realize that Edgar Martinez has an award named after him. Which shows we're getting old. We talked about this also before the show. We're getting old, man. Edgar's got an award named after him.
And that's my guy. I was playing Showdown with Edgar, you know? That's a this is a throwback. These guys are getting awards named after him, and you're absolutely right, man. It does make you feel like we've aged a little bit.
Ken Griffey Jr. Major League Baseball squad with Ken Griffey. I think a lot of us played as Edgar Martinez just because who didn't play with Ken Griffey Jr. back in the day when those games were headlined after him?
I mean, dude, think about backyard baseball. You know, Edgar Martinez was a player in backyard baseball. Like, and these guys are, I want to say Derek, who, there was one player that was still around. It was like a couple of years ago. That was the last active backyard baseball player.
Was it Pujols? It might have been Pujols.
It might have been Pujols. I think you might be right with Pujols, which is so crazy to think about. You know, it's the turnaround of baseball, but it's good for the sport. It's great for the fans. You're going to get a lot of just new, young, raw talent coming in. So it's exciting. But to answer you with this DH, you know, the Edgar Martinez Award, you know, I'll start in the AL. Yordan Alvarez. I mean, how do you beat that man? And he's one of the best hitters on the planet. And in a stacked lineup with just a great team all around him. So I'm going to stick with my guns here. I'm going to go Yordan Alvarez.
And now there's only one winner. There's not an AL-NL winner. So are you going to take him over my pick?
Oh, it's only one winner, huh?
There's only one winner. And I'm sure he would be your pick, too, had you known it was just one.
Yeah.
Winner, that's the obvious. If he plays. Yeah, which is a whole nother.
Oh, so you're going with Shohei.
Got to go with Shohei Ohtani. Or someone with Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani. That's the first time I've heard that, actually.
The best was a video, and I think I sent it to you, of Pete Rose taking a selfie video, and he's laughing with his manager, and he's going like, oh, wow, if only I had an interpreter back then.
Yeah. I saw a video, a picture the other day that killed me. It was Pete Rose with his arm around somebody, and they were just like, oh, Pete Rose hired an interpreter, and it was Ipe's face. I was like, man, these guys, the internet just never misses, bro. Never misses.
No, they don't. And they're also ruthless with other things, too, because as you scroll under those comments, there's comments saying, okay, well, that didn't stop him from going after children. Apparently, Pete Rose allegedly had an affair with an underage girl. I didn't know this until I looked into the comments and Googled it.
I hope not.
Allegedly. Yeah, I hope allegedly. Not, too. It's, you know, because, man, I used to love Karl Malone, too. And then you hear these things about these athletes you love. And Rose was not quick to say it was a different time. You weren't alive back then, sweetie, to the reporter that asked. I was a little taken back. Look, I'm a big Rose fan. It was a lot. But it's a different day and age, I guess. Look, back in the day, I'm sure.
For that like, let's for something like that, I feel like the times don't change. You know what I mean?
Okay, it's look, like, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves is all I'm going to say. All right? Times change. Yeah. I'm not saying it's right what Pete Rose did. I'm just saying that the bar is set different every 100 years, every 50 years. But yes, it's definitely despicable. And that to anyone out there listening, as we move forward with our picks, because another cat, which is now no longer probably ever going to be playing baseball again, I thought that the future of shortstop was at Tampa Bay. But once again, that's a whole other story.
Man.
Jesus.
They had statues of that guy over in Tampa, man. He's... Who knows where he is?
It's off the grid now.
He has a new name. He has he has a new haircut. He might be like, man, who knows what Wander Franco is doing?
He's wandering.
I feel like Wander Franco is like Voldemort now. He's like, you can't speak his name in baseball.
For sure. Oh, that's worse than, you know, once again, that's why Rose apparently is catching a lot of heat. And to me, maybe that's why they're not putting him in the Hall of Fame. Nobody's talking about that.
Yeah,
these allegations that popped up a couple of years ago. Yeah, and I was always the biggest Rose fan. Used to love him in WWE when Kane gave him that tombstone pile driver.
Yeah,
but after seeing some of the stuff today that I saw, pretty creepy, pretty gross stuff. So that being said, yes, Ohtani is who I'm picking for the Edgar Martinez Award. I think he'll win it again if he does play the season, which he will. There's too much money behind Ohtani. Yep. He's the face of baseball, and it would cripple the sport if he were to get hit in some weird gambling allegations, because like all these guys are gambling. Also, yeah, one more thing. He definitely did it, right? No, there's no way. I moved $200 from a bank account and I have four banks call me.
Yeah, I mean,
you think they're not going to.
Something like, you know, with these guys, they have, you know, they have millions of dollars. It's not, you know, we're looking at thousands, like tens of thousands of dollars that are moving, you know, X, like, you know, you'll notice 20 to 24 to 20 to 25. But when you got all these millions, hundreds of million dollars rolling back and forth, you know, you can probably miss 4 or 5 million here or there, or he's
That's
not looking.
That's a lot of money, Franco. $4 or $5 million.
It's a lot of money to us, but in, you know, if you equate it to what the money that he's making, yeah, you know, it's almost like, you know, going out to lunch. So
it's pennies on the dollar.
Yeah. I would like to think that he didn't do it. I would like to think that, you know, I just don't like that they came out first and they said that, you know, Shohei paid the debt, and then 20 minutes later, Shohei is accusing him of stealing from his account. You know, listen, if you want to bet, go ahead and bet. But, you know, and these guys don't understand, you know, in California, that's, you know, that's a wire fraud. You know, it's the thing. It might Literally. Not be a thing where they're from in Japan, but, you know, over here, there's different rules that they're adhering to. But man, if this is anybody else, they're already class action lawsuit. Gone. They're out. They're not playing. Gone. And yeah, it's because it's like you said, they have so much money invested in him. But this is like the Black Sox 1.5. Like, I won't go 2.0. I'll go 1.5 because, you know, who now the next step is finding that bookie.
Yes.
And who's the bookie? Is it the mafia? Is it who's taking these bets?
That's, you know, a lot of money.
It's a lot
Having
of money.
That much money going through.
And obviously it's not the first time, you know, it can't be the first time this has happened. You know, out of nowhere, it's just like, oh, hey, let me get $4 mil. I don't think
to have that type of credit line, you're not going to give an interpreter that type of credit line. You're going to give the richest North American athlete.
Yeah.
In the entire world. I mean, that's the credit line to give out to them. $5 million. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't mean to go off topic. I don't mean to go off topic here, but did you see the Michael Porter Jr.'s brother?
I can't remember. Yo, things are hitting the fan.
That is bad. Like, you don't think you're going to get caught
in the sport?
Yeah, like
while playing,
dude. Did you see the video? Like, they're showing all the like the games that he threw, and like he has like an eye injury. He's sick. Did you see the video where he banked the three pointer by accident? He wants to miss, and he banked three, and it went in, and he looked like so disgusted. And then
unreal.
30 seconds later, he took himself out of the game. It's like, dude, you don't think that you're going to get caught for this? Like, come on, man. Some of these guys, it's just, you have so, you, like, that $1.2 million that he was going to make from just sitting on the bench? Bro.
Does that restore your faith that sports aren't rigged? When you see guys able to get away with cheating in the game, does it show you that there is no pre-planned outcome?
Listen, man, there's some sports that you can't rig. You know, for me, baseball is so tough to rig because, you know, how do you know that even if you're the pitcher, like Shohei rigging that game that they're saying, like that there was a bookie in Japan took a bet for the Angels versus the Braves, or was the I'm sorry the Dodgers versus the Braves last year? They took the over of 6 runs, up 6.5, and the Braves -3. As a parlay, put $1 million on it. Shohei was pitching, gave up 6 runs and didn't get any hits. Dodgers lost like 7-0 or 8-0. Like, that is, you cannot just go out there and be like, hey, I'm going to give up all these runs today and not get taken out of the game. Baseball, I don't think you could really.
Unless you're Shohei, for what it's worth, unless you're Shohei.
I don't know, man. It's
and you're the you said that you met the Angels. Like, if the Angels,
no,
they have nothing else.
He was with the Dodgers when it happened. But it's still like, even when you're a pitcher, you don't know that you're going to make that pitch, and this guy's going to, you know, he's going to hit a home run. He could just miss, and it's a flyout. You know, I think like a sport like the NBA, like NFL, those are so much easier to rig, especially through the refs. You know, the umpire can do as much as they can, but now there's challenges. You know, the challenge in the K zone. They're challenging safe and out, balls and strikes. So baseball is a tough sport to actually rig. So I have faith. I have faith that baseball is not rigged, but basketball and NBA, the NBA and the NFL. I don't want to say it's rigged, but that someone's making money.
It
somewhere.
Could very well be.
Yeah,
someone's
making their money somewhere.
Something to think about as we go into break.
For sure.
It's a shame because we are so limited with this radio broadcast. We're only limited to 2 hours, so there's going to be extra content on our website, theryanshow.net. If you're listening on the radio, be sure to go there. NYPB, you know what that stands for, New York Pot Butter. It's evolved into the oven. And Franco is broadcasting on Fox Sports Rochester. You can hear us on Sunday. We're going to come back, give more predictions. But if it comes to the World Series, you've got to go online to hear more. This is The Ryan Show FM, Franco Van Durka in studio. And yours truly, Ryan Vernell. Don't go nowhere. We are looking into the MLB season for 2024 and making our picks here on The Ryan Show FM. That sounded almost AI generated the way that I said that. And it's not too far until we are there to a point where we don't even have to do this show, Franco. We simply tell a little chat box what it is we want the show to be about, and the chat box just comes up with it. It's
and they call the world that red. And they call me player two and you player one. And that's how we rock.
Exactly. That's kind of the path that we're going down. And we do have a bunch of predictions here, but just a little bit less time than we'd like to have. So we're just going to go through them really quickly. I'll tell you who my relievers of the year are before we get to the good stuff. And that's Josh Hader in the American League. I think Josh Hader is going to absolutely crush it with the Astros. I'm so pissed off he's on the Astros. And then we have Edwin Diaz with the Mets. This is proof. This category is absolute proof that I'm not being biased because I can't stand the Mets and I hate the Astros. But I picked the Mets and the Astros to rep these awards. That's the Trevor Hoffman Award and the Mariano Rivera Award.
And you gotta love the both of them, man. So for me, I'm gonna go in the NL. I love Jose Alvarado with the Phillies. I've always loved Jose Alvarado. I think he's just such a beast. If he can stay healthy, there's no reason why he doesn't come and swipe that out of Edwin Diaz's respected hands. And in the AL, as much as I want to go Clay Holmes, I can't. I'm gonna go down your route and go with Josh Hader. The guy's just so good, man. He's coming in. He knows he's only coming in for three outs. So that's all he's got on his plate, which to some people seems like a lot, but to him, that's his comfort zone. He doesn't want four. He doesn't want five. He definitely does not want six. So bringing him in for three, get him in and out in the shower, in his car on the way home, and he'll collect you around 45, 50 saves this year.
And sadly, I think he will do so. I actually have the Astros slated to finish above the Texas Rangers in the regular season, but the postseason, well, that might be a different story. For comeback player of the year in the American League, I picked Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You said, does he qualify well? To me, he does, because he fell off, at least according to his measures last year. Mm-hmm. I was expecting him to at least hit 20 home runs within the first, 40 games his home stadium.
Right.
Just and he hit a single one for I don't know the exact number, but I remember all year long, that's all I heard from Toronto Blue Jays fans. Was their misery on how he just couldn't hit a home run.
Yeah, see, for me, comeback player of the year, I just think of, somebody who was hurt maybe, or, again, somebody who had a really, really down year. So I feel like Byron Buxton's always in that mix just because he's always hurt.
Right.
But I'm gonna stick with New York, man. I really think Anthony Rizzo can come back this year and really play some good baseball. His head's all cleared up. You know, DJ LeMahieu is right now, he's on the DL, so that clears up first base for Anthony Rizzo and Anthony Rizzo alone. I think Anthony Rizzo could have a really, really big year, and I would love to see it because he is so much fun to watch at the plate when he's on, because he knows the zone so well. And for me, I'm just if I'm golfing, playing basketball, baseball, I just love watching a lefty do anything. So the left side, I'll watch him all day. Just stroke them right over the little right field porch.
And that's what he does. Everyone talks about Soto. Soto's always hitting opposite field home runs, those dead center home runs. But it's Rizzo that just pulls those home runs. And he had that concussion when it was a former teammate of Juan Soto that ran into him.
Yeah.
The steroided out, my roided out man. No, did he? I got to add that in. Fernando Tatis smashing into poor Anthony Rizzo. And he had that concussion and still played. Imagine hitting a baseball thrown from a professional pitcher with a concussion.
No,
for all those days. I mean, come on. Of course, you're not going to hit over 200. He had one of the worst averages in baseball, but before that, had his best career year. So I think that's a great pick. I picked for the National League comeback player of the year, I wrote Corbin Burns there, but he's moved to the Baltimore Orioles.
I picked
two AL comeback players of the year. I'm going to say similar to what happened. All right, let me think. On the spot, if I had to pick a comeback player of the year, I'm going to go with Edwin Diaz. I know that he was hurt. We're going to go with what you said. Somebody that was hurt that's going to have a comeback. I think he's going to win reliever of the year and comeback player of the year.
That's a good
one. I feel like he's going to come out with a bang this year.
That's a great pick, man. I got to be honest. I didn't even think about him. I'm going with my boy Mike Soroka. So Mike Soroka, mm-hmm. For those who don't know, he's been hurt, riddled with injuries for the last let's call it 5 years. This man is a stud from Canada. Absolute stud starting pitcher. He was with the Braves organization for, I want to say, the last 5 or 6 years. Had an Achilles tear in his ankle, had arm problems left and right. He is healthy, and he cracked the Chicago White Sox starting rotation this year. If this man stays healthy, I would take Mike Soroka for comeback player of the year, and I would take him in top five for NL Cy Young of the year as well. This kid is, he has control of four pitches. He throws them on a dime at any time. And I'm a big Mike Soroka proponent. So I would love to see him come back and really turn it on for the Chicago White Sox.
I like it. I've got here for the AL Manager of the Year, Kevin Cash, who to me is one of, super underrated, right? I mean, somehow the Rays, with literally no payroll, there's a bigger payroll at Payless than with the Tampa Ray Devil Rays, and somehow they're always so good, and he's always making the right choices. You could say it's analytics and it's whatever's going on in the front office, but Kevin Cash does a hell of a job. I think he's slated, I think it would be his third Manager of the Year. I'm not sure how many he's won, but I know he won 2 years in a row not too long ago.
Yeah, he's something, man. That whole organization, though, they're just always a winning team. They remind me of the Cardinals back in the day, who just could never go below 500.
AJ Hinch is slated to win the award according to Vegas.
Okay,
but I don't buy. I'll never vote for that man, that cheating scumbag. Although the Detroit Tigers do look all right. I mean, he's turned to them around, that's for sure. And then in the National League, I have Craig Counsell, who's now with the Cubs. He's making $8 million a year over the next 5 years. He's the highest paid coach now in Major League Baseball. He's the winningest manager in Brewers history. And he made the playoffs 5 times in 9 seasons, managing arguably one of the worst franchises in modern history. And I love the logo, love the colors, love the history behind that franchise. But Council made them somewhat relevant again. The only reason why he won't win is because the Brewers are in that division and the Cubs are, they're dealt a better roster. So now it doesn't mean as much. Those wins mean a little bit less.
Yeah.
He's getting them for the Cubs definitely. Than it does if he gets them from Milwaukee. So what do we got, Franco, for your Manager of the Year choices?
I'm with you on the Kevin Cash call. I think there's just no way he, if the Rays are above 500, if they place third in the division, that's a winning season for the Rays. They have no cash flow, and they consistently do it with no starting pitching. They have guys that come out here, open up the game, throw an inning or two. Some guys, if they're lucky, they go one time through the order, and then it's onto the bullpen. So I go Kevin Cash over there on the National side. I'm a big Cincinnati Reds fan this year. I really think the Reds have a huge year coming ahead of them. So I'm going to go with David Bell. He's got a young staff. They got a great pitching staff. They have some real, real talent. Offensively, Edwin Encarnacion Strand is going to put on an absolute light show this year. He's going to just be fireworks after fireworks in Cincinnati. Him, Ellie De La Cruz. So I'm gonna take David Bell on this one for NL.
That's going to be a fun team.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun team.
That's another underrated division, because I think that the St. Louis Cardinals are slated for a bounce back. They just got Sonny Gray.
Yep.
They still got a team. I thought that St. Louis was going to be a lot better last year.
So did I. Last year was the first time that I feel like the St. Louis Cardinals really lost their shtick a little bit. They had like an edge to them where it's like, hey, we're playing the Cardinals. It's going to be a tough series. They just had no starting pitching, man. I love Adam Wainwright. I love him to death.
Ooh, that was tough to watch.
Yeah, man. It's just, he's so good, but, he's getting old. They need to, Jack Flaherty was a disappointment after, two, three really, really solid years. He's another guy I would love to see, comeback player of the year. I love a good Jack Flaherty. So when he's out there doing his thing, he's another guy that's fun to watch.
I think he could be good. So now to the good stuff, to the awards that everybody has been waiting for. And let's start with the Cy Young Award in the American League. Franco, who do you got?
The AL Cy Young. I hate to say it, but I'm going to go in our division, in the Yankees division, I'm going with Corbin Burnes. The Orioles are great. They're a great squad. They're so young. They have so much talent around them. And Corbin Burnes hasn't pitched with a team that has this amount of talent, this amount of raw talent. So I think he's going to be so jazzed up to do this, to get out on the mound this year and just do his job every 5 days. Tough division. It's a tough division. He's going to be pitching against some of the best teams in baseball. They have a pretty tough schedule ahead of him as well. But you know what? Corbin Burnes, for me, with that young, explosive Orioles team behind him, I don't see why it doesn't have a spectacular year. Where are you going, AL?
I'll tell you why. It's exactly why I can't vote for Corbin Burns, is because the AL East is so strong when it comes to who he's going to have to face. Mm-hmm. Between the likes of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the BGOs, and the young kids of our 90s favorites that are on the Toronto Blue Jays. But most importantly, he's got to go up against Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, mm-hmm. Verdugo, and so many others with the Yankees. A Red Sox team, which might look horrible on paper, but historically always comes out all right. And of course, the Devil Rays. That's a scary group of teams to be going up against, as we mentioned earlier, some of the better divisions in baseball. But I'm going to have to go with somebody who every single year takes a leap forward and the stats always jump up. And now it's time he gets the hardware. And I don't want him to be good, but he's good. And that's Pablo Lopez with the Minnesota Twins. If you look, and I know he's getting shelled right now in spring training, but as we talked about many times, spring training really does not matter. Just looking at his strikeouts over the past few seasons, it went from, over the past three seasons, 115 strikeouts to 174 strikeouts, up to now 234 strikeouts last year, and pitched to a 3.66 ERA. I think Minnesota's looking better this year. They're healthy, finally.
Finally.
So I think that it's just a matter of time before Pablo Lopez wins his first Cy Young Award, and I think it might be this year. In fact, I think that Minnesota's looking kind of good this year.
Minnesota is.
And I know we bullied them forever. Yeah, yep. I got a feeling just seeing how they were in the playoffs. They finally broke their curse.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're going to come out kind of swinging and kind of hurling. So that's my pick. In terms of National League Cy Young Award winner, who do you got, Mr. Van Dirker?
Ah, man, it's so tough for me to pick this one. I'm going with two guys in the NL East. Between Zach Wheeler, who just gets better and better as the years go on. I really, it's between him and my guy Spencer Strider. He's just such a beast on the mound. Talk about a guy who just wants to be out there. He'd be out there every 3 days if he could, but he has to, every five. So it's so tough for me, man, because they just, like I said, they both just do their job every 5 days. But I'm going to go Zach Wheeler here. Stick with the Phils on this side.
Then I'll go with Spencer Strider.
Okay.
Because that's who I picked. So it makes perfect sense that you picked Wheeler, because Wheeler was who I was going to pick too. And then very last minute decided on Spencer Strider. One stat that I look at when it comes to pitching is FIP, which nobody really talks about.
Okay.
Franco, are you familiar with FIP?
Somewhat.
It's called Fielding Independent Pitching.
Yeah.
And most people that listen to the show are not familiar with FIP. It's similar to ERA, but it focuses solely on the events that a pitcher has the most control over: strikeouts, walks, hit by pitches, and home runs. So it really puts the ball on their shoulders.
For sure.
No pun intended. And Spencer Strider dominated that category last year with, he only pitched to a 3.86 ERA. It went up a bit, but his FIP was 2.85. A league best.
Okay.
So I think that you're onto something with Spencer Strider. Also, with a release extension of more than 7 feet from the rubber to go along with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, my man's an animal.
Animal. Animal. 7 feet, that's a good, some good elevation he's getting there. He's getting really, really getting on top of that baseball.
Think about that. When you watch the highlights, like the eye test, the man's an animal.
Animal.
We're finally up to the MVP award, Franco.
Yes, we are. I want you to take this one out. I want you to start us off. Let's go NL rookie. Let's go NL MVP. We'll go NL MVP and then we'll go AL MVP.
I like it.
I think I already know who you have for AL, so I want to hear who your NL is.
All right. So to get started, and I'm not a fan of the Dodgers, obviously, in any facet of it, but Mookie Betts. Probably the most versatile player of our time. Might I say, the Pete Rose of our time. I know he's hitting way more home runs, but if you look at, and I'm not trying to make any sick references to earlier either. Love Mookie Betts.
Yes, you are.
Although you have to say No Diddy a lot when you're talking about Mookie Betts, right? I wasn't making a No Diddy reference, but yeah, he says a lot of things that make you say pause, No Diddy, things in that category. But Mookie Betts, super versatile, and he's now playing shortstop for the Dodgers.
Yep.
I feel like that alone kind of gives him a little bit of an advantage because he can play everywhere at this point,
just
like Pete Rose back in the day. And the way that he can mash, the way that he can just make contact.
It's crazy.
Love me some Mookie Betts. I feel like even in that stacked lineup that is the Los Angeles Dodgers, I feel like all of these components are going to make it undeniable that Mookie Betts is the MVP of the National League.
I like that pick, man. I was between him and I literally have him on my paper as number two. But I got it again. I stick to my guns here. Ronald Acuña Jr. is in my opinion, the best player in baseball. He's the best player that we've seen in baseball since Mike Trout came up when he was young. I'm a huge proponent of Ronald Acuña Jr. The man does everything. He stole 74 bags last year. Okay. This is coming from a guy who hits 40 plus home runs and 100 plus RBIs. You know, he does everything. And he's an A plus outfielder. No one runs on him because he has an absolute hose. He's, again, like you said, Mookie's in a stacked lineup. So is Ronald.
Even more stacked, arguably.
Neither lineup has a hole in it, which is going to make it really tough for our Yankees throughout the year. But, for me, Ronald Acuña Jr. is going to have to do something seriously wrong to not get that back to back MVP.
And he's a leadoff hitter that can steal 70 bases, dude, and hit 40 home runs. So here's the real question, Franco. What's a crazier accomplishment? Aaron Judge breaking the American League home run record or Ron Acuña having 40 home runs and 70 stolen bases? Because that's never been done.
Oh, God. The 62 is, you know, it's one of those days. It's one of those days you're going to always remember where you were for it. So for me, I think it holds a little bit more weight than Ronald Acuña Jr. The 40-40 club is awesome. You know, it's what, five guys, A-Rod, Soriano, Bonds, and Canseco. You know, that's elite. That is a elite company. Yeah. But, you know, it's the 62 is
the 40-70 club. There's one man.
There's one human being. And his name is Ronald Acuña Jr.
That's it. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I get the 62 home runs, but I'm sorry. People are forgetting about Barry Bonds hitting 70. I know that he was roided up, but who knows what kind of crap Aaron Judge is. And I'm the biggest Yankees fan ever. There's the modern medicine that these guys intake these days. Like, come on. Is it really any different than bull shark testosterone or whatever my man Barry was pumping into his veins? Okay.
Hey, Barry just drank milk, bro. What do you mean?
He drank
milk and he got good night's sleep. That's all you need.
Exactly. He ate his vitamins and minerals like Hulk Hogan. We have here American League MVP, and you already know who I picked.
I think I'm with you on here, though. I think we're both going Juan Soto.
I think it's a pretty – this is his year. There's been many opportunities to win MVP and in the National League for him, but there's just guys that are having better seasons. Like Shohei's in there. There's no more Shohei Ohtani to deal with. I mean, this is kind of his for the taking, and especially, like we mentioned, I know that he doesn't always pull the ball, but the right field wall at Yankee Stadium is going to do him some favors at some point, let's be honest. And plus just that, you know, we need to talk about really quick, pride of the Yankees. And Juan Soto this year is going to feel that for the first time. What pride do you have to be on the San Diego Padres? I mean, yeah, he made it prideful to be a part of the Washington Nationals. Before that, why would you ever want to be on that team? Now he's on a historical franchise with a city behind him and more Dominicans screaming his name than the king of the Dominican Republic himself, whoever that is. So it is go time for Juan Soto. What are your thoughts, Franco?
He's just, man, he's in such a stacked lineup. You know, again, it comes back to having protection, being comfortable at the plate, having guys that are going to drive you in or guys that are going to be on base when you're up to bat. You know, if there's a guy on base and you're up at bat, it's an uncomfortable at bat for the pitcher. We talk about this all the time. So the more uncomfortable at bats that Juan Soto can have forced on a pitcher, the better he's going to be. So, you know, he's going to benefit humongously from hitting in front of or behind Aaron Judge. You know, it's like what we just talked about. Either someone's on or he's on for somebody else because they're dancing around. So, and it's a contract year. The man's got to get paid. So this is the year when he absolutely shows out. I hope he shows out and decides to sign long-term with the right team in New York. But listen, we got a whole season of baseball ahead of us to let that unravel.
Scott Boras dropping the ball on all of his clients. Hopefully he does with Aaron Judge in the sense of the Yankees can scale back that contract a little bit.
Real quick, before we sign off, we got to just talk about that Scott Boras just fumble of an offseason. Bro, this man, what a debauchery for Scott Boras. This man was looking for five players. He was looking for a combined $870 plus million for five players. They signed for a total $237 million. you kidding me with that?
That's wild. That's a statistic in itself that's going to be looked at. Everyone with their analytics.
It's good for baseball. It's good for baseball. We talked last year with all these humongous contracts against on Shohei, Trout, Tatis, all these guys. This right here just shows that they're not going to be dishing out money like they are to these stars.
You know, billionaires are winning again. That's score it. One yeah. for the billionaires, baby. That's Let's it, go. Man.
They just told Cody Bellinger, Blake Snell, Matt Chapman, JD Martinez, and Jordan Montgomery to go take a seat on the end of the bench and collect what they can.
You might be rich, but we're richer. Gotta love those MLB owners. Franco, thanks for joining us. Everybody, continue our conversation with us at theryanshow.net. If you're listening on the radio, we thank you, but we'll thank you once again if you go to theryanshow.net or to our YouTube channel at theryanshowfm. We're going to be putting out full video content very soon. That's right, the Lost Files, as we call it. Season 1 is on the way. Full episodes on our YouTube channel. Go to @TheRyanShowFM to learn more. Be sure to check out the Oven Podcast. Franco puts on a hell of a show with Mario and Jerry. And anything else you got to say to the gang here, Franco?
Hey, let's get ready. Let's strap in for a humongous 2024 baseball season. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, this is the last Monday until October, but we don't have any baseball. So strap in. See, let's get the Yankees back on top, huh?
It's go time. See you next week, folks. Over and out. Peace.